This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, it's RÚV English Radio. My name's Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today. Time for a new episode of The Week in Iceland. And my guest today is my colleague on the Polish desk at RÚV Polski here at RÚV. It's Margaret Adamsdottir. Hello again.
Hello, everybody.
I think it's fair to say that we talk about The Week in Iceland. The week has been dominated, really, by the resignation of the former Minister for Children's Affairs, Children and Education, that is Ásthildur Lóa Þórsdóttir, who stepped down last week. A bit of a bombshell, really. Shall we go back to Thursday? Shall we go back to that resignation? Why she stepped down?
Yes, it's quite a story. She stepped down because when she was a young woman, 22, she had an affair with a teenager, a guy that was, when the affair started, he was 15, and then they had a child together, a boy, when he was 16 years of age. And that fact, apparently nobody knew about her. And there were also suspicions about parent alienation from her, that she might have subjected her child's father to. And all of that came out pretty abruptly. There was a huge storm in the media, and she demissioned a day after that.
What's interesting also, there's a second strand to this, which is that the Prime Minister's office got dragged into this, because the person that tipped off the office claims that she was doing so in a confidential way, that her identity, the person tipping off the Prime Minister's office, would not have their identity revealed to the minister, the now former minister. She, the former minister, however, was told of this person's identity and went round to their house and tried to telephone them and tried to contact them. So the person who tipped off the Prime Minister's office claims a breach of confidentiality. The Prime Minister's office have said, actually, there was no breach of confidentiality. And I'm not yet sure, as we sit here, which version is being accepted, but that is certainly the defence that was made by the Prime Minister's office. So that's the other strand here, that you've got the PM's office, a very new Prime Minister, of course, who only became Prime Minister in December of last year, sort of being dragged into this.
Right, so this is not a very popular place to be in for the Prime Minister.
It feels like a story that will continue to run, although a lot of political commentators have said that it's not great for the new government, but it's not fatal for the new government. They will get over this. The People's Party, the party of the now ex-minister, Ásthildur Lóa, will, they think, be able to remain in the coalition.
Yes, and they already appointed a new minister. Yesterday they had an emergency meeting with the cabinet, and the new minister started his job this morning. And there, I read somewhere that, it was that long ago that it hasn't been known.
Yes.
It's a very, very personal matter. So obviously, this coming out, the minister did take the decision to resign. How big of an influence over the new government it will take? I guess it's more of a public opinion matter.
But what's also interesting about this, and if you're listening to RÚV English Radio outside of Iceland, you might wonder why a ministerial resignation has been such a big story. It's because it's quite rare here for ministers to resign from the government. I'm originally from the UK, where Boris Johnson famously had many tens of ministers, I think it was 47, resigning on one day. But there have been very few ministerial resignations since the birth of the Icelandic Republic. I remember when Bjarni, of course, resigned as the finance minister,
yes,
which was last year, I think, or maybe the year before now, in fact. That was a huge story because it was a resignation.
Yes. And also Ásthildur Lóa is one of the shortest residing ministers of Iceland. Yes, it's a rather big story because Icelandic people are rather tolerant, let's say, of people, and respectful of certain certain administrative positions. And so, no, that hasn't been happening very much.
It is the shortest-lived ministerial career, I think, but probably also worth remembering that she has now been in that role for longer than Liz Truss was Prime Minister of the UK. So that's what we compare it to, I think, maybe internationally. All right, let's look to something that has not happened. And I know that you were on holiday recently, and before you went away for a week, I think it was maybe 10 days you were away, you were certain that there was going to be another volcanic eruption on the Reykjanes Peninsula. As we have our conversation at 13 minutes past two on Monday afternoon, it still hasn't happened. And now the view is from experts that it might not at all.
Yes, and it's a strange reality to be faced with, because I guess, me personally, I have gotten used to that interval of a few weeks up to 3 months between those eruptions. Now, the way it's behaving, it's quite unpredictable. They are saying it might happen, but it might as well not happen at all for another few months or a year or two. And yes, it's a change. It's a change. We have experienced those eruptions for a few years now, and me and you are so lucky or unlucky that when we do record something together, then it's just before the eruption. So I thought that by now it would have happened, but it didn't happen. And no. Maybe we are facing a very large event in the history of Iceland. I mean, obviously it has been large already, but it might go on for a very, very long time.
We don't want there to be an eruption. I think we need to make that clear as well, because lots of people listening to RÚV English Radio outside of Iceland understandably think it's quite exciting when this happens. But what we need to remember, of course, is that there are 4,000 people in the town of Grindavík who have had their nerves shredded for the last 18 months, waiting for this to happen, hoping that the eruption doesn't cause more damage to the town, hoping that even earthquakes don't cause damage, because in fact that's what's been more damaging to Grindavík even than the eruption. So we must always remember that, as exciting though this might seem, there is a town in the southwest of the country that dreads this happening. There's also the risk to infrastructure. We don't just mean the Blue Lagoon, we mean the power station next to the Blue Lagoon, which keeps the water hot for about 25,000 people. So there are lots of reasons that we don't want this to happen.
Obviously, and there are also roads, very important roads that surround the peninsula, the main one going to the biggest international airport in Keflavik. So that's really, really important. And as you say, the people of Grindavík are very loyal to their town, and they really want to go back to their homes. They want to live in Grindavík again. They want Grindavík to be rebuilt. And what happened also during the week, last week, was that the government decided not to launch a big rebuilding operation just yet. What was said at this, in the statement, was that the situation is still too fragile, too insecure, and it's not possible to launch a big operation. So the benefits for the companies and for the residents have been extended for another year, I believe. So it must be very, very difficult for the inhabitants of Grindavík to be in this limbo for so long, for sure.
The town itself and those who run the town are very, very keen that it should be preserved and that it should thrive, and there should be plans to rebuild it in the future. The mayor has spoken about how exciting it is that the council offices have moved back to the town. They were in Reykjavík for the longest time, in Tryggvagata, in the city centre. The council temporarily moved the premises there. But there's a real desire, isn't there, from the mayor down, you might say, within the town, to get people back there, to make it a place that people can live in again.
Yes, absolutely, because it's a very big town on the scale of Iceland, also a very thriving port, and lots of industry, tourism, blossoming tourism, hotels and restaurants and all of that. It's a real shame, but also, you know, it's just it's a very difficult situation, absolutely unprecedented in the history of Iceland for now. So I think we are all hoping that the eruptions will stop to the point or move to a different area, so Grindavik could finally be rebuilt.
And it needs to be certain, doesn't it, that that's not going to happen again? At the moment, you know, it feels like the eruptions are moving further north and further away from the town, but it's just not certain enough for those people in Grindavik to say, we can definitely move back in and everything is definitely over.
Well, no, and also the responsibility, obviously, is within the government and the civil protection there are obviously, I guess, as many as the inhabitants of Reykjavik, of Grindavik and of Iceland, as many opinions on the subject. What should be done, what shouldn't be done. People are commenting it, obviously, for all sorts of reasons. And yes, from the touristic perspective, it's a great event, spectacular and interesting. But it's also a human tragedy, and that tragedy... unfortunately cannot be turned into a victory just yet. Because it's too unsure, as you say.
Something else which has caused a great deal of uncertainty is the domestic flight schedule to the Westfjords. Now, a few weeks ago, Icelandair announced that they weren't going to be running a domestic flight service to Ísafjörður and the Westfjords after next year. The reason for that is quite complicated. It's to do with the size of the planes. In Greenland, the runways at some of the airports are being expanded. They're being made larger, which will mean that larger planes will serve those airports. That means that the small plane that Icelandair currently uses to serve part of Greenland and Ísafjörður, as far as Icelandair is concerned, will not be viable to use just for the Ísafjörður service. Why does it have to be small? Because that's one hell of a turn when you come into land in Ísafjörður. It's great fun. I love flying. I'm not scared of flying at all. If you're a bit fearful of flying, you might be a little bit concerned when you come in and land in Ísafjörður, because there's a 180-degree turn and you land between a cliff and the sea. But the pilots know what they're doing. So the long story short is these small planes, not viable just to run on that route. However, the managing director of the Westfjords Development Office saying that the government needs to step in to make these flights viable.
Those flights were always very, very popular, and somehow there are no bus connections with Ísafjörður, between Ísafjörður and the rest of the country, especially with Reykjavik. So the plane is the main public transport, actually. Yeah. And Icelandair is not actually doing it because of the lack of tickets sold. That's not the reason. But because it's such a small part of their operation, I guess. But I've done a few of those flights to Ísafjörður, and I must say, for the first time, I was absolutely terrified. it's amazing. It's an amazing flight.
Great fun, I think.
It's great fun, especially the views and the proximity of the mountains, and it's an incredible experience. But it's very, very important to maintain that public transport. So I believe there will probably come a different operator that will take over those connections.
I think particularly in the winter, when the roads are in a pretty dodgy state. Now, we know that that flight can be cancelled a lot because of winds. High wind is what seems to take it out. But not to have that backup, if you like, not to have another way of getting into Ísafjörður, as you say, there is no bus route. I can't imagine how long a bus journey would take to Ísafjörður from Reykjavik, because when you drive, even in perfect weather, it takes long enough. The roads are just so twisty. You've got so many fjords to go in and out of. However you do, it's going to take a long time. There needs to be a flight.
Yes, absolutely. There needs to be a flight. And I don't believe there won't be a flight. I think it will be solved. Obviously, it always causes a stir up when someone says, oh my God, we're not going to do that anymore. Also, it's really important for the inhabitants themselves to be able to jump into a flight and go to the doctor. There are students there. There is a university in the Westfjords.
Yes.
So this is an absolutely vital service that needs to be provided.
And I think one story that perhaps generated as much interest as the Ásthildur Lóa story with the Roof English audience this week was a simple survey, the World Happiness Report, showing that once again Iceland is third on the list of the world's happiest nations. Same as last year, Denmark number two, same as last year. Finland is the happiest nation, again the same as last year. But the UK has fallen to its lowest ever position, probably because I left, that's why. And the USA has fallen to its lowest ever ranking as well. Wonder why that might be. So, the third happiest country in the world is the one that we're sitting in right now. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I'm very happy here. And yes, there might be lots of things that are happening and there might seem not okay. But I guess all the basics are pretty well covered. And the things that matter are very well designed and are happening in the right way. And I'm talking here about the quality of schools, the access to information, and the education, the tolerance, the diversity. I guess, yeah, I'd say it's a happy country. It's a pretty happy little place. And lots of pools also to dip in and to enjoy the views and build up your body for the temperature.
I had cause to be back in the UK for a few days last week, and the thing that I missed the most, and the thing that I've done every single day since returning, is going into the pools.
Yes.
And it was snowing this morning, and it was glorious, and that's my favourite condition, to be in the warm pots when the snow is falling from the sky. I'm just going to read the actual question, because some people said, well, you know, what's the criteria for this? How do you determine whether someone's happy? So I'll ask you this question. You can give me your number. Please imagine a ladder with steps numbered from 0 at the bottom to 10 at the top. The top of the ladder represents the best possible life for you. The bottom represents the worst possible life. So on which step of that 10-step ladder would you say you personally feel that you stand on at this time?
I would say a 9.
That's quite happy.
Yeah, because as I said, like I feel I have a handicapped child, which I think has a wonderful service in this country and is treated very well. I have another child which has grown up here and also is doing well in his career. And I feel understood and happy as an immigrant. And the weather can be challenging, but I personally also absolutely adore the changeability of it. And adding the nature and the society that is really diversified by now, and also old with lots of traditions. So the whole mix is quite satisfying for me personally.
And you understand me, because we sit together and gossip. So you understand that I really enjoy the cold weather. For me, that's not one of the downsides. That's one of the benefits. For most people, it's not one of the benefits.
No.
But despite that, Iceland is still third.
Yes, but so is Finland. It's
Finland's
a cold country
cold too.
And so that should give a clear message. And Denmark, you know, and all the Nordic countries, none of those countries are warm countries or super sunny countries. So that's not the thing that determines your happiness at the end of the day. It's not the sunshine. Although we do have enough sunshine in Iceland here for those that think that it's always cloudy and rainy. No, it's not.
Well, that's what blackout curtains are for.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So apparently the weather is not everything.
No.
And there are very important things that enable you to lead a peaceful, happy life with access to everything that you need for your life to blossom. And I think that's pretty much the reason.
I'm number 8 on the ladder, by the way, and you were number 9, but you're a happier person than me.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I've been here longer. You'll get there.
Also on the list, by the way, Sweden number 4 and Norway number 7. So there are 5 Nordic nations in the top 10 on the World Happiness Report. Margaret, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Margaret Adams-Dottier, head of RÜV Polski. My colleague here at RÜV, and this is RÜV English Radio. My name's Darren Adam, and you can get in touch with us anytime. We're english@ruv.is.
There's more from RÜV English, with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. RÜV English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÜV.